The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and welcome to a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. The weekend is here. I'll tell you something. I think I need to take off Thursdays more often because it's one day back and then boom, the weekend again. You know me, I don't take a whole lot of time off. But I did take yesterday off to celebrate my husband's birthday, and it was our first date night. It was the first night we went out. We went out to dinner and to a gallery. I'll explain in a moment. The first time we've done anything like that since the pandemic hit, since March of 2020. So we're talking 14 months now. So that was good. We wound up going, you know, we're such simple people. We went to Blaze Pizza, which is where we had our wedding dinner. Excuse me. And it was so good. And then you may recall that last week, I spoke with the drummer for Def Leppard. His name is Rick Allen. And again, I'm not a Def Leppard fan. My musical tastes are much more, much quieter. Yeah, but I like a lot of loud rock too. I'm just, that's not in my wheelhouse. But anyway, I know his story. I mean, the guy had was the drummer for Def Leppard at the age of 15, had a horrible car accident some like 8 years later and lost his left arm. So he learned how to drum again using this specially made foot pedal for his left foot to play the left hand parts, and he's the one arm drummer. Well, not only that, but he's an artist, and you know I've been painting lately, so I'm now all of a sudden more interested in art, and so we had a lovely conversation last week, and he's doing these three shows in South Florida this week. And the first was last night in Fort Lauderdale on Las Olas. So David and I went by there, and I got to tell you, as cool as the paintings looked on the website, you know, the pictures of the paintings, seeing them in person is a whole different thing. I mean, it's so much better. And I was really, really impressed with his work. But I got to tell, we didn't even get to see him because when we got there, it was like, I don't know, 8:30 or so. And there was a long line. He was set up in a back room, you know, doing the meet and greet thing. And there was a long line of people there to meet him. And I'm sure most of them were not buying his paintings because I think the most inexpensive one I saw was a little over $5,000. And I did see one that was around $35,000 or something. So I'll tell you, if you want to buy a painting, I've got plenty, and I can do custom paintings of your pets, just saying. Anyway, so that's where I was yesterday. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you got to listen to the show I put together, because on Wednesday, we were talking about war for good reason, obviously, what's going on in Israel and Gaza, and it's just horrible. Thankfully, you know, I had recorded the news yesterday morning that it was on the beginning of the show. And at that time, there was talk of a ceasefire coming, but nothing had been done. Nothing was nailed down by the time I finished recording the show and uploading it. But by the time the show came on the air at 5 o'clock Eastern, the ceasefire was already in effect, which is very cool, and it is still holding. So knocking on wood laminate here. Please let this stop. Enough. But the interview that I chose to rerun yesterday was actually a request from someone who had heard it when it first aired. It was back in, when was it? It was like 2016. And things were getting bad in Iraq again. And it looked like we were going to send troops in. I mean, or we were going to bomb or do something. And I thought, you know what? Let me reach out to General Wesley Clark, because he's, as far as military people go, I always thought he was somewhat reasonable. I remember, you know, he ran for the presidency, didn't get very far in 2004. I believe. And then he dropped out and threw his support to John Kerry, if I'm remembering correctly. I think that was it. But wow, we got into this interview and he started talking about how important it was that the United States be the strong world power, and we've got to flex our muscles, basically. And then he was talking about oil, and we got to keep the price of oil down. And I'm just, with each question, I'm getting more and more disillusioned. I'm thinking, oh my God, after all these years, I'm seeing his true colors. So it was an eye opener of an interview. That was the last time I ever spoke to General Wesley Clark. And I feel pretty confident in saying it's the last time I ever will, because I got nothing to say to him. I lost really all respect that I had. And it just shows that, I guess, once a military person, that's where you go. I mean, he thought we were totally within, not only within our rights, but something we had to do, go back into Iraq to wipe out ISIS. And, you know, if we were bombing from the air and there were civilian casualties, well, you know, so be it. And when I took what he said and paraphrased it like that, he said, well, I didn't use those words. No, you didn't. But we know what you were saying. So I figured by the end of that, it was time to lighten things up for the end of the show. I had asked the YouTubers on Wednesday, what would you like to hear tomorrow? And a number of people said, well, one of the old music interviews. So I reached back into the archives and pulled one out from this week, 22 years ago. So we went back to 1999 for an interview and performance from Randy Newman. And Randy Newman is just, he's American brilliance. So I hope you got to hear it. If you didn't, I did podcast it. And if you don't subscribe to the podcast, so it doesn't automatically download for you, you can just go to NicoleSandler.com, go to the blog section under yesterday's date. So it's NicoleSandler.com/5-20-21. That's the format. You can always find the shows using that format. They're all posted there. And there's no paywall. I know most of the, you know, the big podcasts do have a paywall, but I come from old school radio. And sorry, radio is free. And I understand podcast is not radio, but I'm old. Let me just live out my golden years and do it the old school way. So yes, we survive based on your donations, but I don't shut anybody out because I can't afford to pay for every podcast I might want to listen to. So if you can afford it, I hope you will, you know, pitch in either with a donation, a one-time or recurring. Have me paint your pet's portrait. It's another way to support the show. Keeps me busy in my spare time. But anyway, feel free to share the show. Yesterday's was an interesting one. I hope you enjoyed it. And here we are today. It is Friday. I got to tell you one other thing before we get into the meat of the show, just taking care of some housekeeping stuff. This has been, I feel like I'm in a time warp this week. Seriously. So on Wednesday, when we did the conversation about what's happening in Israel, and I reached out to Ron Skolnick, the way I know Ron Skolnick, and I told you this on Wednesday, we went to elementary school together. I grew up in New York, in Bayside, Queens. In fact, we moved to Florida the day I graduated from sixth grade, from elementary school. So I went through kindergarten through sixth grade at PS 169 in Queens. And most of the same people were in the same class all the way through, because I got to tell you, the things that come flooding back in the memory are just weird. There was a program, I guess, in New York City schools then. It was called IGC. And I guess it stood for Intellectually Gifted Children. And we were the smart ones, obviously. I'm guessing they gave us some kind of IQ test. So there was generally two classes in each grade that were the IGC classes. And as far as I could tell, the only difference was we learned French. We did French with puppets. And I still know my basic French conversation from fourth, fifth, and sixth grades. Again, the mind is weird in what we remember. So anyway, so Ron Skolnick, who back in the day was Ronald Skolnick, was on with me. And I even pulled out this class picture, their second grade class picture, and I showed it to you. In fact, if you're watching one of the video streams, I'm going to show you the picture again. So this is our second grade class. Yes, in black and white. It was 1967. Oh, my God. That's me right in the middle, the little, there's three boys in the front row. We're right behind them. I'm in the middle with the headband on, cute little girl there. And the, my guest on Wednesday, Ron Skolnick, then Ronald, was the second one from the right on the top. But now here's the weird part. And this is what freaked me out, yesterday. So the mail comes yesterday. Well, before I go move on, let me tell you. So you see me in the middle. I'm the little girl with the headband. To my right, actually to my left, but as we're looking at the picture, it's to the right of me. It's that girl. Her name was Edna Pizer, right? Edna Pizer. And I remember her because we went through, almost probably every year together. I would say we were in the same class almost every year, if not every year, from kindergarten through sixth grade. And we were not particularly friendly, but I remember her because we went through, all those years together. Well, fast forward many years later to back in the early 2000s, I was on Air America Radio. And somebody told me about there was a columnist for the New York Post named Andrea Pizer. And Andrea Pizer was a crazy right-wing lunatic. Well, it turns out Andrea Pizer is Edna Pizer. She changed her name, and I can understand why. I mean, Edna? Really? I think her parents were immigrants, and so I can't blame them. But so she is Andrea Pizer. That's the little girl who was sitting next to me in this class picture. And I wouldn't have brought that up at all, except that day the mail comes. Or no, I have a post office box. The address that's on the website is my post office box because I don't put my home address on the interwebs. So David went and picked up my mail, and there was a letter there that I opened, and this is like Twilight Zone stuff. The letter reads, I found this picture I took at a class trip with PS-169 in the 1960s when you were Nikki. I went by Nikki. I'm Nicole. But when I was a kid, everyone called me Nikki. My family still calls me Nikki. Some people still call me Nikki. But when I moved to New York after college, I just started going by my given name, which was Nicole. Anyway, it signed Cheers, Andrea Pizer. And in it is this photograph. It is a picture. It's an original photograph taken, I'm guessing, around 1967. I look like I did in that second grade picture. How weird is that, right? And the only way that I knew that she, when I found out that she was the same person when I was in Air America, I thought, well, this could be fun. Let me reach out to her and invite her to come on the show because I'm a liberal. She's a right winger. We went to grade school together in New York. We could have fun with it. And she chickened out. She just never did it. And I never heard from her again. Well, Air America has been off the air for over 10 years now, 11 years now. January 21st, 2010 is the day Air America went off the air. And so now, all these years later, this thing shows up in my mail the same day that I have Ronald Skolnick on the air. Twilight Zone stuff. So I just had to share that with you because that's a weird coincidence. And I know there really are no coincidences. I was going to play the Twilight Zone music, but I only have the Twilight Zone music with the opposite world sounder. I guess that would work.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
And the Twilight Zone. Wow. So I had to share that weird phenomenon with you. All right. So that happened. Now let me tell you about what we're doing on today's show. There's news. You know, there's nothing earth-shattering. I mean, it's all in the news. And what I do now, what I've been doing lately, is when the show proper ends at 6 p.m. Eastern, I hit the What's News extended version. So all the work that I do earlier in the day with the news is still there. So we get it, even if I don't get to it on the show. And it tends to be tacked on to the end of the podcast as well. So if you get it. Anyway, so my head is spinning from all this, right? But there's this other discussion that I've been privy to. I am on an email list. I've been on a few of them with fellow progressives. This one has been going on. It was in a different sort of incarnation earlier, and then it morphed, I don't know, about 6 or 7 years ago. And so on this email list, it's a lot of people that I've known for a long time. I've known them mostly virtually, although I met a lot of them at Netroots Nation all those years that I went and broadcast live from Netroots Nation. But I haven't been in a long time. But that's how I know these people. That's how I know Dave Johnson, for instance, who's a regular on this program, and Gaius Publius, who's now Thomas Neuberger, and others. Jeff Hauser from the Revolving Door Project. I only met through this email list. It's a lot of really good progressives who are very involved in one way or another with progressive politics. And that's the thing, the connecting thread is that the people in this list, on this email list, are all progressives. And so there's obviously been a discussion about what's going to happen in the forthcoming elections. So we're coming up, we had the 2020 election, a change in the administration, thank God. So, but historically, when a new party takes control in a presidential year, in the first midterm, that party historically loses seats. Remember, you know, Obama was elected in 2008, and you remember what happened in 2010. It was a bloodbath. So that tends to happen. I mean, part of it was Obama not living up to expectations. Hope and change, what? But it was also just the historic nature of it. That's what tends to happen. So we're looking at a 2022 midterm where the incoming administration, the Democratic Party, took over the Senate too, and kept the House, but by the tiniest of margins, like the tiniest of margins. There's no room for error in the Senate. It's a 50-50 tie with Kamala Harris, the vice president, who gets to be the tiebreaker when there's a tie vote. And in the House, the margin is so small that actually on the subject yesterday, they had the vote on the funding for the Capitol Police to beef up security at the Capitol. Well, you know, there's been a thing that I don't agree with the vernacular. I don't like the language of defund the police. I think it's the wrong message to send. We need to retrain the police. We need to refocus the police. We need to fire all of them and hire them back and train them anew. I mean, we need a complete overhaul. But defund the police, I think, me personally, is the wrong message. Nobody asked me, but that's what it is. But the very progressive wing of the House, known as the Squad, which is now up to 6 members, they're fully on board with that concept. So when the bill came up to spend a whole lot more money on police for the Capitol, they balked, as you would expect. But the margin of difference between the sitting Democrats and Republicans in the House is so small, and with Joe Biden taking a couple of them out for his administration, and those special elections haven't happened yet, and there were a couple of deaths, it's really tight. If all 6 members of the squad had voted no on the bill, it would not have passed. So they cut a deal. 3 of them, Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, and Ayanna Pressley, voted no. And then you had AOC, Rashida Tlaib and Jamal Bowman, who voted present. And by them voting present, the vote came in at 219 to 218, and the bill passed. So they cut a deal with Pelosi. They played along with the Democrats. They registered their protest. They made their view known, but they said, you know, we're not going to get on board with this. So the present votes didn't count as no's, so the bill still passed. What happened was, let's look at this. Every single Republican in the House of Representatives voted to defund the police. You got that? They all voted to defund the police. They said, no, we don't need no stinking security at the Capitol. Nothing happened on January 6th. It was tourists. Yeah. So, okay. So that's going on. And I'm trying to recall how I got to that. So you know, that's the big news, I think, of the last day or two. That and the the ceasefire. Thank you. That's the big news. But here we are, like, waiting to see what's going to happen in the 2022 election. So on this email list, we're having a discussion. And let's look at it this way. It's not only the historic nature of it, where usually in the first midterm after a presidential election, the party that comes into power loses seats. We're also looking at a few other things. It's like the perfect storm, because we had the census last year, such as it was under Trump, where I think the whole thing should be thrown out and disqualified and redone because they fucked it up entirely on purpose. I have no doubt. You know, they said they were, everything. You don't need me to relitigate what they did or didn't do. It was a mess, and certainly not going to be accurate. But they take that census, the data from the census every 10 years, and that's how they apportion, the government apportions representation in Congress. So a lot of blue states are losing, going to lose seats. I think New York loses a seat. I think, I don't remember off the top of my head, but with those new seat allocations, there's also redistricting. And with redistricting comes gerrymandering. Now, we're already pretty gerrymandered as it is. I know the Democrats had worked on trying to fix that. And I know I, for years leading up to 2020, said, this is the most important election. You got to vote, because what happens in this election, who runs the state governments, they're the ones who are going to get to do the district drawing based on the new 2020 census numbers. Well, the Democrats blew it, because the Republicans still have the majority, control the state legislatures in the majority of states. The Democrats may control the more populous states, but that doesn't matter, because we have this stupid thing known as the Electoral College. So there's going to be redistricting, new gerrymandering done for the majority of states by the Republicans in a year when historically they would pick up seats. But wait, there's more. Because they have spent the last 6-8 months, well, since the election, doing everything they can to invalidate the credibility of the American election system. And for years, I was right there with them. But I'll tell you something, this year, it ran pretty flawlessly and pretty, you know, almost problem-free, because so many of us voted by mail. There was early voting. It's because of the pandemic, all these other ways to vote were enacted, and it went swimmingly. It went just really smoothly, except for the guy who used to occupy the Oval Office, you know, the orange one, who was screaming since before the election that if he were to lose, it would only be because the election was fixed, that there was no way he could possibly lose. So, and it's kind of what he did in 2016, too. I mean, it's the same game plan. He was saying the same thing. This is an illegitimate election. It's a fraud. It's fixed. Setting up for him to lose, and so he could contest it. Well, ridiculously, he won in the Electoral College, then you notice you never heard a word again about the fraudulent election. The Stop the Steal slogan, they had that waiting in 2016. They were going to use it. And then all of a sudden it went back in the box to pull out in 2020 after he really lost the election. It's all manufactured. It's all bullshit. But you have these lemmings who get their, quote, news from Fox, and even worse, OAN and Newsmax, and they believe the bullshit. So now, in the minds of 70 million Americans, Joe Biden stole this election. He didn't legitimately win. And so they're telling you that you can't trust the American electoral process or election system. So there's so many elements stacked against us that any reasonable person has to be looking at 2022 and saying, holy shit, we are likely gonna lose, you know, probably control of the Senate and quite possibly control of the House too. In the Senate, you know, they only need to pick up one seat more than the Democrats do. In the House, it's only a handful. It's very, very tight. So many of us are a little bit nervous about what's coming just by the redistricting alone. And the seats that are lost because of the census results, that could do it. That could swing it to the Republican majority in the House. On that alone, the House districts change and the lines change. And so, you know, I'm trying not to feel so defeatist these days. I'm still thinking no matter what happens, we're better off than we were a year ago because at least we don't have Donald Trump in the White House. Now, again, I thought, especially after January 6th, that the Republicans would finally be shaken out of this trance they're in. I don't know why they're charmed by a misogynistic, rapist, creep, angry, ugly, miserable con artist, but this is the great white hope of the Republican Party, and I'm using those words, you know, because it's true, you know, being white is a thing, and there are anyway. So you know, a lot of us are thinking 2022 is going to be a really rough year, and 2024 probably is not going to get a whole lot easier. So I'm reading some of the messages on this mailing list. So I started telling you about our guest today. Is his name is Guy Saperstein. He is a retired attorney, but that doesn't tell the story. He is one of the biggest civil rights attorneys in the history of the United States. He founded the largest private plaintiff civil rights firm in the country. He successfully prosecuted the largest sex, race, and age discrimination class action suits in American history. He also prosecuted False Claims Act cases against Lockheed Martin regarding satellite surveillance systems and Raytheon, Boeing, and TRW regarding the sham National Missile Defense Program. Guy Saperstein won so many of these civil rights cases, and he got very, very wealthy doing so. And today, he doesn't practice law anymore, but he is, I believe, one of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party's probably biggest donors. And as a donor, he has the ear of a lot of candidates. He is plugged in and on top of it all. And I read what he writes in this list that we're on, and I give it a lot of credit. You know, if it's on a weighted scale, his stuff is weighted pretty heavily because he's been through it. He is plugged in. He walks the talk and talks the walk. He does all that stuff and puts his money where his mouth is. And then last week, he started a new thread on this email list, and the subject line simply read 2022. That was the subject line. And the message that Guy Saperstein left from his group was, I'm changing my prediction for 2022. I had predicted the Democrats would win 250 to 300 House seats. I'm changing that to 300 with 350 possible. Think about it. It takes, I think it's 218 to get the majority of 435. You can get 218 and you have a majority. He's predicting 300 Democratic seats, possibly 350. And then he said, in any case, it will be the biggest political destruction in American history. Thank Donald Trump, the biggest Democratic benefactor in American history. It will take the conservatives 50 plus years to recover. Enjoy. And okay, so obviously that was not the prevailing opinion of the group. And a lot of people push back and say, you know, things like from your mouth to God's ears, or, you know, things like that, if only. And someone posted, I simply don't see how this happens. Certainly not this early in the cycle. To which Guy Saperstein responded, by 2024, I guarantee it. So I figured if nothing else, we could certainly use an injection of optimism, right? Because I've been, you know, I started off after January 20th pretty upbeat and confident. In the last week or two, I said, well, you heard me say it the other day, the new administration smell is starting to wear off, you know, and some of the, you know, the piece of French fry that the kid dropped in the back seat is starting to fester, and that smell is starting to take over. That's where we are. So John Doe is asking in the chat room, what does he base it on? I don't know. And so, you know, like I said, I have a million questions. I trust Guy Saperstein. So instead of posting the questions on this email list, I simply invited him to come on the show and join us for a conversation. And he should be joining us any minute now. We, you know, we're going to do the Zoom thing. So I'm just watching the Zoom window to see when he shows up. He's not there yet. So I'll tell you what, this might be a good time to take a quick break. We'll come back in a moment with Guy Saperstein to find out what he's basing this on, how he can make this prediction, hope that he wasn't joking. So we'll be right back. Okay, are we in the break? I'm looking at Progressive Voices. It doesn't appear that Progressive Voices broke yet. Let's see. Did this work? Yeah. No? Yes. No, I don't think Progressive Voices. Yes. Okay, so Progressive Voices is in a break. While they're in a break, I guess I can promote my paintings again. I'll play a commercial for you. Because Father's Day is right around the corner, and you know what makes a great Father's Day gift for that animal lover in your life? A pet portrait. Pardon the interruption while I tell you a little story. I literally hadn't picked up a paintbrush since seventh grade, but I was bored during the pandemic, so I bought some paints, and I haven't looked back since. I shared a few beach sunset paintings online when I got my first request. A friend asked, can you paint my cat Buddy? I said, probably not, but I'd try, and I surprised us both. Someone else then asked if I'd try to capture Char, the dog. And wow, I like this one even better. So I started painting all of my dogs from through the years, and others asked, and now I've kind of got a mini business going painting pet portraits. They make the perfect gift for any pet lover in your life. Or even for yourself. The only bad thing about loving our fur babies is that we tend to outlive them. Now you can keep a beautiful reminder of your precious pets forever. Interested in more? Send me an email, nicole@nicolesandler.com, and we'll talk. And if you'd like to see more of my paintings, just go to nicolesandler.com/pandemic-painting. Thanks for looking.
Now, back to Nicole on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Well, I don't see Guy in the Zoom room yet, so let me share with you. You know, I love hearing from you guys. As I told you, I don't answer every email, though I do answer most. But I read everything that comes in. You can email me at Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. If you have a question about the show or a comment or you want to tell me I'm wrong or I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, feel free. I love the feedback. Radio is a weird medium when you're not taking phone calls. It's so one-sided. You don't get the immediate feedback from being in a live theater or something. So one of our listeners, and I don't know if he's in the chat room today or not, AJ took a recording of the show one day when I was particularly animated. I guess I was bitching about something that Tucker Carlson said. I don't watch Tucker Carlson, but every now and then he invades my Twitter stream or something. And so there was something that Tucker Carlson said that truly pissed me off. Well, AJ took my reaction and a song that I like to play on the show every now and then, a clip of the song, because I don't play the whole thing, so I don't get copyright violated. And he did his own little mix. Now I'm going to have to cut it off early because I don't want to get copyright violated. But behold, listener AJ and his production skills.
Do you really enjoy living a life that's so hateful?
It's repulsive.
You're repulsive.
And it's really distasteful.
Oh my God. Hey, fucker.
Fuck you
very, very much. And then it goes on like that. I saw the email. I clicked on it. It was on the phone. And AJ, I laughed out loud. So I got to thank you for that. it was awesome. It was just really, really great. All right. I'm going to send Guy a message because I don't know where he is. Where are you? Are you coming in? All right. So I guess while we're waiting for Guy Saperstein to join us in the Zoom room, I can open up the phone lines. If you want to get in on this and tell me what you think is going to happen in 2022 and 2024, please do. The other thing that gets me as I'm listening to the Republicans' arguments, not that there are any legitimate ones, against the January 6th commission, they're so full of shit. It just blows my mind. I'm going to take you back to 2015. The Benghazi hearings were about a breach at an outpost, an intelligence outpost in Benghazi, where four Americans died. It was terrible. Shouldn't have happened. But the Republicans made it like it was, that Hillary Clinton personally went in and killed these people. And so I want to share with you, I got to the point where I called it Benghazi Tourette's, because anytime a Republican opened his mouth, it was to say Benghazi. It was Benghazi Tourette's. Well, Hillary Clinton issued her first, made her first TV campaign ad, and the audio in it calls out Kevin McCarthy for saying the quiet part out loud. That the only reason they did this Benghazi hearing was, well, to screw with them.
The Republicans finally admit it.
Republican Kevin McCarthy saying the committee investigating Benghazi and Clinton's emails was created to destroy her candidacy.
Hello.
Everybody thought Hillary Clinton was unbeatable, right? But we put together a Benghazi special committee. What are her numbers today?
Republicans have spent millions attacking Hillary because she's fighting for everything they oppose.
So they're in that spot. You heard Kevin McCarthy said he admitted the quiet part, that the only reason they were going after Benghazi was to discredit Hillary Clinton. Here's the thing. That's why they're so against this January 6th commission, because they think the Democrats are going to do what they did and use it as political fodder to win elections, which, you know, they should. But that's not the point. The point is our Capitol was attacked on January 6th by people who were loyal to Donald Trump. So there's that. All right. To the phone. Hi, David.
Hi, darling. Thank you again for a wonderful birthday.
Oh,
yesterday.
You're welcome. Happy birthday, baby.
So I think Guy has a point, if you know, when he ever comes on. I think he has a point in that we stand a pretty decent chance in 22 because so many people have seen what assholes the Republicans are and what bullshit they have brought forth. They have no policy. All they have is hate and division and cancel culture and, you know, calling people that are on the left snowflakes and that kind of just ridiculous bullshit. And yes, there are a lot of people out there that swallow their bullshit, but there are more people that don't. You know, the fact is Biden still won by a lot of votes. And I think that those people out there who turned out for Biden are aware enough to be able to see through the bullshit, and they will come out in 22 and support Democratic candidates.
Right. Well, I hope so. And maybe, I mean, what he's saying, I should go back into the list and read some of his comments since he's not here. I can sort of do his part by proxy. That he believes that the Republican Party will be basically out of commission by then, that they will implode, that they will no longer exist in the manner that they have existed up until now, and especially over the last four and a half years.
Well, and oftentimes on TV, when you hear people like Adam Kinzinger and Lynn Cheney and Liz Cheney rather, and you know other people who are not Trumpers, they talk about the fact that, well, you know, I've spoken to many of my Republican colleagues and they all agree with me in private. They don't want to come out and say it in public because they don't want to, you know, get a mean tweet directed at them.
Yeah.
But it's that sort of sub rosa kind of current that runs not only through the people in office, but the people who put them in office. And I think that when push comes to shove, and there's going to be more stuff that's going to come to the fore here, because Pelosi said yesterday that if the commission concept doesn't pass in the Senate, that they're going to go ahead and do something in the House anyway. And when this stuff starts coming out even more, and like the stuff that just came out about Barr getting the woman from CNN, Barbara Starr's cell
yes.
phone information,
yes.
and just all the other heinous shit that they did, plus all the stuff that's coming out about Trump and the Trump organization as individuals, particularly if Alan Weisselberg flips,
that's right.
It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a free for all. And I just don't see how that sort of thing can happen. And the majority of people are going to come out and vote for it as opposed to voting against it. It just, that's not to say it's not possible, but it's just counterintuitive. It's
mm-hmm.
counterintuitive.
Now, I hear what you're saying, and if it plays out the way it should, but there are some people like me who are horribly impatient, and it's already May, it's 5 months since the inauguration. In fact, 5 months yesterday. I want to see some progress already, and I know, I don't know how the saying goes, the arm of the law swings slowly or something, but you know,
no, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Okay. So I was close. And, at least we're starting to see inklings of action. We're seeing, Giuliani, his house, you know, raided. We're seeing now we're getting indications that Weisselberg is flipping. We're hearing there's stuff happening. It's just not happening quickly enough for me. And Donald Trump is so slippery that I feel like he's going to wriggle out of anything and everything.
I understand. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with what's happened for the last 4 years, because that is what's happened the last 4 years. Time after time after time, it was obvious that he was guilty or at least significantly implicated in everything that he was implicated in. And because of the fact that we didn't have, our side didn't have sufficient control over the votes in Congress, he was able to wriggle off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, too much stuff is coming out. And this fraud that's going on in
yes.
Arizona is really, I believe, making them look bad as well.
Oh, well, definitely. And now, finally, the Republicans, even in Arizona, are starting to stand up and say, enough already. This is absurd. Today, we heard that Katie Hobbs, the Secretary of State, said the machines that they were messing with, we can't use them anymore. Those need to be replaced because there was no, basically, chain of custody on them, that you don't know who did what to what machine, and we can't trust them anymore. They've been corrupted. So that's millions of dollars worth of equipment that the Senate Republicans in Arizona just basically blew up.
Katie Hobbs, didn't I hear her
yeah.
interviewed on the Nicole Sandler show?
Yes, you did. You did. You did.
I think it's more that she just doesn't want to have to deal with those machines because she knows they probably have cooties now.
Well, of course, but you never look, as we learned years ago, those machines can be corrupted. Those machines can be hacked. They didn't believe it when we were saying it in 2000 and 2004, but they can be. And so, you know, she's at least being proactive here and saying, Those machines are no good. They've been corrupted. They've been out of my control, and I can't base any credibility on them. So I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Antifa might have gotten their hands.
Of course, Antifa, without a doubt, without a doubt. So
yeah.
I think we're being stood up. So I'm just going to open up the phone. I don't know where Guy is. I'm looking at the email list. We were talking moments before. The showtime, and he reconfirmed and everything, so I have no idea where he is. See, this is the bad part about doing interviews over Zoom, where the guest comes in the Zoom room, because I don't have a phone number to reach him, so I'm kind of at his mercy. And it's, you know, it's live radio, so it is what it is. I missed a call a moment ago because we were talking, David. So 954-889-6410 is the number. If anybody wants to get in on this, on the line with us is my husband, who heard me stalling and came to my rescue. All right. Yeah. So, all right. I'm going to grab this other call. Talk to you later, David.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Hi. Who's this?
So this is actually Surfer Girl Philly from chat.
Oh, hi.
You can call me Carly.
Okay. Hi, Carly.
So, a couple of things.
Yes.
First, I am very, very, very unbelievably tired, and I've had two cups of coffee today, and I never have coffee. So
uh-oh.
I'm probably entirely jittery and all this stuff. And this may not make entire complete sense, or I might not be speaking in full sentences.
Okay.
But I'm going to get my point out there. So, all right. I don't know what you were fully talking about the whole time. I just kind of saw you on my Twitch, and I'm like, you know what? Only 10 people watching. Might as well pop in.
Okay.
And I'm listening to this guy, right? The guy that was just talking.
That was my husband.
And I
yes.
kind of came in. Oh, that
uh-huh.
was your husband. Okay.
Okay.
I came in like mid-conversation.
Okay.
And I'm just like, okay. I'm trying to figure out where to start here.
Okay. The beginning is a good place.
Right. So this past month, I think about 300 lawmakers signed on to a bill to give aid to Israel.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know. We've always given aid to Israel for some reason. It's been going on for decades. I don't know that
a
new
like,
aid bill was passed this year. I'm not quite sure what you're...
The point, I guess I'm making a point here. Hold on. So that bill was actually created by Democrats, but Republicans made it pass. So there's a point there, okay? Now, on top of that, and I'm going to get to my actual point.
Okay,
let me,
please.
Like, connect the dots.
Okay.
I know it's not, like, you can't see it, but you will. So another thing was there was a bill for policing that passed, I think, sometime today or the day
yesterday.
Before.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Right.
Okay. So I am what you would call a leftist or a socialist or a communist.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly where I fit. I might be an anarcho-syndicalist, but the point is I'm on the left. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I have very valid criticisms of the Democrats. Mm-hmm. I actually almost abhor the Democrats on some level. But besides that, the Republicans are worse.
Yes.
And I recognize that as well.
Okay, that's good.
What I'm trying to say here is that the only one of the so-called squad of the left and whatever that actually voted against the bill was Cori Bush.
No, that's not true. Three of them did. Cori Bush, Ilhan Omar, and...
No. Ilhan Omar voted
Yeah. No, you're wrong. AOC,
I'm not.
Ayanna Pressley
AOC
voted no.
Present. AOC voted present. Ayanna Pressley voted present. The only one that voted against it.
No, sorry. This is where I'm going to hang up on you because you're wrong. Sorry. I can't let her keep going. Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is Roger in Minneapolis.
Hey, Roger in Minneapolis. I'm sorry. I had to let Carly or Ashley or whatever her name was go because she's wrong. Three of them, there were six, and I said this at the beginning of the show. Three of them, Ayanna Pressley, Ilhan Omar, and Cori Bush voted no. Three of them, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Jamal Bowman voted present to give the Democrats the win. If they had voted no, they would have lost and the bill would have gone down. They cut a deal with Pelosi to pass it. You know, you're welcome to come on here and present facts, but you're not welcome to make up your own facts. I told you what it was. It was 3-3. And sorry, you're not going to, if you're going to argue with me, I'm going to hang up on you, which is what I did. So, hi, Roger. What's on your mind?
Well, Nicole, here's what motivated to call me. I was upset with the way your previous caller was conducting herself on your show.
Well, that's why I hung up on
her. I wanted to offer a primer to her on how to appear as a guest on somebody's broadcast.
Okay.
It's the Nicole Sandler show. You do not give Nicole Sandler instructions or tell her what to do on her show.
Mm-hmm.
You respect her space and you listen to her.
Yeah.
I felt that she was not doing that.
No, I know. And thank you for that. Look, I appreciate her exuberance. You know, she's too quick with the labels and not enough facts. Stop calling yourself a socialist or a communist or whatever. Just be and stand up for the things that are better for the world. You know what? I'm sorry. I don't know where she was going.
Well,
when she started in...
She waltzed onto your program and decided she was going to take charge.
Yeah.
And I wanted to counter that with my displeasure. So moving right along from there, Nicole... I am becoming increasingly worried about the wishy-washiness of the Democrats in their dealings with, they've got to figure out how to get a set of brass knuckles on. We've got to get the voting legislation done. We've got to end this freaking filibuster. We've got to stop being wet noodles. Do you think there's any hope?
No, I don't know because of Joe Manchin. It seems like it's all Joe Manchin all the time. And I think someone needs to pull the rug out from under him. But the problem is you really can't with him because he can just as easily say, well, screw you. Hello, I'm a Republican now. And then Mitch McConnell becomes majority leader again, which is the last thing we want. So I don't know what the answer is.
Well, it's a terrible schlamassel as far as I'm concerned. And and I'm very worried that unless a real wide-scale PR campaign gets embarked on by people with the right megaphones all the way up to the president, but everybody singing the same tune. Look, the Democrats are in charge here, and somehow we've got to find a Lyndon Baines Johnson to take Manchin and Sinema and read them the Riot Act.
I agree. For heaven's sake. I agree. I agree. Joe Biden is not LBJ, number one. By the way, apparently they're just releasing a whole slew of White House, you know, Oval Office tapes from LBJ that I saw a thing played on the air on TV the other night. That looks pretty fascinating if you're an LBJ fan. But yeah, Joe Biden mm-hmm. doesn't have that in him. He's trying to make nice. Now, on the infrastructure thing, you know, he's still doing the let's play the game, even though we may not have a lot of time to play this game to get anything passed, where they came back with a counter offer on the infrastructure deal to the Republicans, bringing it down by about $500 million or something, and bringing it down like 500 some odd billion dollars, but they're still like a world apart. I don't know why he's going through the motions. That it just is reminding me of what Obama did, which didn't work out too well.
The idea of giving up most of your position, as far as I'm concerned, very early in the negotiation mm-hmm. here, that's unfortunately what President Obama often did.
Yes, he did.
And that's something that I'm afraid we see happening
I
far
hear
too
you.
Often.
I hear
with
you. Hey, Roger, I'm going to run because I've got somebody else calling in and I want to get as many voices as we can. Thank you for calling, Roger. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hi, who's this he hung up. Okay. Well, I did have someone in the 757 area code on the line. Best laid plans and all that. All right. Well, 757, if you want to call back in, feel free. If not, I may just have to share something to make us laugh. Our friend Lauren Mayer has a new song out today, just published like moments before we came on the air. So I'll tell you what, let me try to pull that up here. And if I can find it quickly enough, Lauren Mayer. Yes. All right, it's right here. So we'll let Lauren Mayer have the last couple of minutes of the show with a new song. It's called You Ain't One of Them. And you know what? I guess I should play for context. Tim Ryan, who is running for Senate, he wants to replace Rob Portman. He stood up the other day when they were voting on the committee, you know, trying to have a January 6th commission. And said this.
I want to thank the gentleman from New York and the other Republicans who are supporting this and thank them for their bipartisanship. To the other 90% of our friends on the other side of the aisle, holy cow, incoherence. No idea what you're talking about. Benghazi, you guys chased the former Secretary of State all over the country, spent millions of dollars. We have people scaling the Capitol, hitting the Capitol Police with lead pipes across the head, and we can't get bipartisanship. What else has to happen in this country? Cops. This is a slap in the face to every rank and file cop in the United States.
Truth.
If we're going to take on China, if we're going to rebuild the country, if we're going to reverse climate change, we need two political parties in this country that are both living in reality, and you ain't one of them.
And you ain't one of them, he said. Oh, this is our 757 caller again. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Vince. I was trying to call earlier.
Yeah.
I wanted to... I'm so sorry. I'm at the Verizon store. My dog's trying to get in.
Oh, no. Okay.
All right. I wanted to call in, and I wanted to talk about Brandy. Oh. And the reason why is that I noticed the Republican Party, they're always good with Brandy, and Democrats are not.
Brandy? Oh, branding. Branding. Messaging. You're right. We suck at it. They're better at it. Yes.
Yes. And it seems that that is the reason why we often lose.
Yes.
And I wonder why. Do we not have things like they do? Or why is it when they have a talking point, it's all over their news?
Because they march in lockstep and we don't. If somebody sent me from the Democratic Party a page of talking points, I'd look at it and then I'd toss it in the trash because nobody tells me what to say. On the other side of the aisle, though, they're happy to take those talking points, and they all parrot the words back. That's why. We think for ourselves, they don't. Hey, I'm so sorry you called in late. Call back again next week, because we are just out of time. In fact, I don't even have time to play this Lauren Mayer song, so we're going to have to do that next week, too. I don't know what happened to our guest. Hopefully he's okay. Maybe he'll join us another time. Or maybe he was only kidding. And it was a May 21st Fool's Day. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. I will see you Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye. And if you're still here, I guess we can do the news. Oy, 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 what a day. Happy weekend, everyone.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As of early Friday morning, the ceasefire is holding. Israel and the Palestinian militant group Hamas agreed to a ceasefire on Thursday, which took effect just a few hours later. This after more than 10 days of intense violence that left at least 200 Palestinians and at least a dozen Israelis dead. Israel stopped the airstrikes against Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip, and Hamas militants stopped firing rockets into Israel. Hamas, which controls the Palestinian territory, said they will abide by this agreement as long as Israel respects it. Israel Prime Minister Netanyahu's office said, "Reality on the ground will determine what happens next." The UN Secretary General welcomed the ceasefire, but said a return to negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians, as well as more humanitarian aid to the region, is necessary. Since the latest fighting began, about 72,000 Gazans have been displaced by the violence, according to UNICEF. Meanwhile, here at home, the House on Thursday passed a $1.9 billion bill to reinforce capital security in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, though just barely. The final vote was 213 to 212. The razor-thin passage came as several progressives, the Squad, withheld support. Representatives Ilhan Omar, Cori Bush, and Ayanna Pressley voted no. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Jamaat Bowman voted present so that the bill still passed, though they were able to register their protests. Ilhan Omar saying, quote, "I am frankly tired of any time where there is a failure in our system of policing. The first response is for us to give them more money." The bill includes $43.9 million for the Capitol Police, $250 million for Capitol ground security, and $162.7 million for reinforcing Capitol windows and doors. The bill now heads to the Senate, where Republicans will likely filibuster it. Now, this is stunning when you look at the facts. Every single Republican in the House voted to defund the police along with the Squad. And it's looking like the Senate will follow suit. And if 10 Republicans don't join the Democrats, the bill is dead. Wow. The only recent piece of legislation to enjoy true bipartisan support is the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, which Joe Biden signed into law on Thursday. In this case, the House voted 364 to 62 and the Senate 94 to 1. Of course, all the no votes were from Republicans. Mitch McConnell's strategy of blocking everything is taking its toll. Several high-profile pieces of legislation have gone as far as they can go before hitting the Senate wall of obstruction and the filibuster. It easily passed the House, which is led by Democrats, and bipartisan talks are ongoing with the Senate. But the House is now out on recess until next month, so it's not likely the bill will hit the deadline. And then there is the case of reforming the U.S. Postal Service. A bipartisan group of senators introduced legislation to fix the mess after the financially struggling agency asked Congress for help. The reforms could save the U.S. Postal Service $45 billion over the next 10 years. And yes, it will remove the requirement that the service fund its health insurance and pension program 75 years in advance. But its fate is up in the air. and hope is fading for a bipartisan deal on gun background checks, one of several gun control measures championed by the Democrats. Oh, and then there's the chance of the Senate agreeing to create a body to investigate this year's fatal assault on the Capitol. 35 House Republicans voted in favor of it, making it truly bipartisan, but they're looking at a filibuster in the Senate, as is the case with the bill funding additional Capitol security. It is time to get rid of the filibuster so that those serious about governing can get on with their jobs. South Korean President Moon Jae-in is visiting the White House Friday. Moon needs more COVID-19 vaccines for South Korea, while Washington needs Seoul's help in pressuring China in areas of mutual concern like human rights and trade. The two allies will also discuss diplomatic solutions regarding North Korea. Moon's visit is only the second time President Biden has hosted another world leader in person since taking office in January. The Japanese prime minister was last month. Well, the further removed we are from the former administration, the more we're learning about their shenanigans. CNN reporting that the Justice Department informed their Pentagon correspondent, Barbara Starr, in a May 13th letter that prosecutors had obtained her phone and email records covering 2 months between June 1st and July 31st, 2017. The letter listed phone numbers for Starr's Pentagon extension, the CNN Pentagon booth phone number, and her home and cell phones, as well as Starr's work and personal email accounts. The report says it's unclear when the investigation was opened, whether it happened under Attorney General Jeff Sessions or Bill Barr, and exactly what the Trump administration was looking for in Starr's records. But the Justice Department did confirm that the records were sought through the courts last year, but provided no further explanation or context. This follows another Justice Department revelation earlier this month that under Trump, it had secretly obtained Washington Post journalist phone records and tried to obtain their email records too. And finally, another day, another cover-up of another black man being killed by police. This time, a video obtained by News Channel 5 in Nashville shows the final moments of William Jeanette's life as law enforcement officers piled on top of him. Now, his daughter, one of his five children, is suing the city of Lewisburg, the county, and several officers who were involved. Jeanette died in police custody in May of 2020 after being wrestled to the ground and knelt on by correctional officers, after Jeanette refused to get in a restraint chair. Jail logs say that the 48-year-old Jeanette was detoxing and hallucinating after his arrest 2 days earlier, repeatedly saying on this tape that he can't breathe and making choking noises as the police officers and Marshall County jailers piled on top of him. At one point, a female officer can be heard responding to him saying, quote, "You shouldn't be able to breathe, you stupid bastard." According to the autopsy report, Jeanette's death was a homicide with asphyxiation, a, quote, contributing cause of death. The coroner also noted that Jeanette had multiple fractured ribs. However, a grand jury has already declined to bring criminal charges against the officers. And this story is just breaking as we're still dealing with seeing the footage of Ronald Green's death at the hands of Louisiana State Police. Green's family was told that he died after crashing his car during a police pursuit. But the Associated Press released video just Wednesday night showing Green face down on the road after the crash outside the city of Monroe, being tased and kicked by Louisiana State Police officers, and he's telling him that he's scared. Initial reports of the incident from the state police didn't mention that there was any struggle between Green and the officers. They just lied and said that Green died in the car crash. When will this end? And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.